To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
All right, everybody, and welcome to
Teller of the Tales. This is Zane.
This is not noise. Stop. I am Zane. You are Liviana. Stop it. Why do you mess with me so? Even though this is Batman week, and apparently you're my arch nemesis right now, who's trying to take me over. I don't know what's going on there.
Apparently he thinks he is Batman. How sad.
Yeah, that's epic right there. You know what?
No, it's not.
Batman is awesome.
No.
Yeah.
Static is awesome.
Oh, my word. You know what? Static Shock, okay, he is cool, but not
it's
as
not
awesome
Static
as
Shock.
Freaking...
It is not Static Shock. His
okay.
superhero name is Static. Static Shock was when he was a teenager.
My word.
That's the show name. His name is Static.
Ladies and gentlemen out there, today is going to be heard. You're going to be hearing me beating up on somebody tonight.
Okay. Anyway, welcome everybody to Teller of the Tales. Tonight we're doing Batman because...
Well, they already know that. I kind of said that after...
Shut up. Okay, Stratosphere's won last round and he chose Batman. So this week it'll be amazing.
Yes, so because it is Batman. Because Batman's amazing.
Okay, that does not answer my question.
What is it? What is your question?
My question was, who's up first?
Oh, up first, yeah. Okay, up first is Beloved Star.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Wow. I'm just going to end this with wow.
Poison bubbled through his veins at his lips. He was paralyzed with a light pain, and there was fear inside him that she just might let him die. He was bound tightly with vines, and they were wrapped around his torso, legs, and throat. "Poor little bird," he heard the temptress coo. He could see the outline of her scantily leaf-clad form just under the lamplight. Poison Ivy stepped closer to him. He tried to speak, his mouth forming syllables, but all that came out was a pained gurgle. Ivy giggled. "It must be painful to die of poison, I know. The searing pain is driving through your skull." She sat at his side, her fingers smoothing over his chest and cradling his head. "It's hard to breathe and hard to think. Your chest hurts and your lungs burn. You're dying. It's your only thought now. Poor little bird." Her red hair was like fire twisting in the frigid air. She glanced up and stared at the sky. "I think it'll rain soon. Maybe our beloved bat will get here in time to save you." She looked back down and smiled. "But then again, maybe not." "Please," he managed to breathe past his swollen throat. Ivy laughed. "You're going to beg?" Ivy looked puzzled, but noticed the boy wonder clutching at his side pocket, but without any strength to remove what was in it. She carefully removed his fingers and took out the object to hold it up to her eyes. A beaded rosary. It had a gold chain with amber glass beads. Attached at the shorter end was a gold cross. Robin mouthed the Hail Mary over and over, just barely having the strength to do so. It started to rain. The water drops pelted over their features, and it was odd. It looked as if the Nature Witch was crying, and that was something Robin highly doubted. Black spots danced in his vision. So was this the end? Ivy caressed his face gently, her nails skimming across his skin. And then she bent her head down and pressed her lips to his. Through their kiss, Robin felt the antidote to the toxin rush through his body. He was cured. Ivy pulled away and the flap of wings was heard. Robin was still exhausted, and now he felt the close-to-death agony creep upon him. He watched, his eyes drooping, as Poison Ivy's vines returned to wrap around her own body. With one last confused look, she disappeared. The Dark Knight swooped down into the abandoned parking lot, blocking out the lamplight. The rain pounded harder down onto the pavement. Robin's eyes fell shut, and he sighed, feeling the rebuking from his mentor to be in the near future, and his exhaustion finally taking him to a deep, dark sleep. Dreams of high-pitched laughter, wind-tossed red locks of hair, and pouring rain haunted Robin off and on in his sleep. When he awoke, it was to Alfred's calm demeanor and a good-sized bowl of tomato soup. "You have been sleeping long, Master Timothy," Alfred remarked, helping the ward sit up to eat. "Master Bruce is out at the moment. He had a business meeting of sorts to attend to." Tim nodded, slowly eating as Alfred commented on the sudden stock changes and various news. Later in the day, as Tim was continuing on his studies in the library, Bruce arrived home. They sat in the library a long time. Alfred brought tea, and they both declined. The tension in the air was tight, but neither of them said anything. Alfred just thought it was annoying, but he didn't say anything either. Days passed, and Batman looked after his younger Robin with a watchful eye. The streets are mostly quiet. The nights are long, leaving the two heroes tired. It was a week later that Robin asked his mentor why of late he'd been watching him so closely. "I mean, I get that you look out for me. You've been doing that for a while now, and you aren't usually overprotective, so I thank you for that," the boy wonder continued, finishing his 30th pull-up and letting go of the bar. Once on his feet again, he grabbed a towel to wipe his face. "But I was wondering why you were accompanying me on my missions. I'm capable of being on my own." Bruce stopped pumping iron and slid out from under the bar to sit up. "I just don't want you getting caught up in Poison Ivy's trap." "I won't, and if I do, I'll get out of it." "She will probably try to seduce you again." "I'm only 16. "I'm warning you that she can seem perfectly okay until she tries to kill you." "Believe me, I know that." "Sometimes you can't trust anyone." Robin scoffed. "Can't trust anyone? Listen to yourself, man. I trust you. You trust me. Albert is trustworthy. Sometimes I think you think too much about things." The boy wonder turned back to go take a shower in the accompanying bathroom. "I'm saying that you should be extra cautious. That's all." Robin waved his hand at him and rolled his eyes, disappearing behind a wall. Bruce sighed and flattened his sweaty hair, clenching his fists. Teenage wards. Why did he always take them in?
All right now, beloved star.
Dun, dun, dun.
I would say for as much time as you had to work on this thing, this was sounded really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely really liked it. As I said, I tend to be very picky on the voices, though. The one big thing that... But yet, though... The voices seem to be lacking, but as you said too, you only had a few minutes there. But the whole rest of the story was engaging without the voices, though. To be honest with you, this was like truly engaging, and you didn't need voices for this. Because it was just that awesome.
I liked the voices. I thought it gave it a little bit more of dimension.
Yeah. Well, it really wasn't much voices. It was basically her voice, in a way, it was like telling you the story, which is a storytelling competition, so yeah, granted, it makes sense. But if you know what I mean, though, it's one of those things that's kind of odd, yet there, but yet, what you brought was really good. I absolutely loved it. What you actually brought that was just pure epic and awesomeness that you just pretty much just took me into the story, and I didn't give a crap. That's pretty much the whole thing I feel. You, Livy?
Are you sure you're done?
Yes.
Okay.
That was long.
I really did enjoy this. I liked the opening the best, like just the blade and like right into it. It was really awesome. I enjoy just the way Poison Ivy's voice was, and you just I really like the fan fiction you chose, because I can kind of tell it was pretty well written. So I mean, you had a good fan fiction to work with, and it seems like the author was really trying to make sure that this was good, and I enjoyed how you worked it and the voices, I think, gave it a nice touch. It gave it more of a character depth. Because a lot of times, like, when you're reading a story, and you'll be like, so-and-so said, sadly, kind of thing. You know, that doesn't... I can't hear that, you know? But if you say the line, sadly, you know, with voice acting and giving that character that voice, I think that it makes the scene that much more powerful. So, yay.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely. All right, I've got nothing else left to you.
Nope.
All right, so up next we have the artichoke.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dear Ms. Grace, my son is a 24-year-old graduate of Gotham University, but still lives at home with my husband and me, rent-free. Since his older sister died when he was 15, we've probably coddled him to excess to help him cope with the loss of his only sibling. Now he has no job, nor is he looking for one, and he's bringing rather loose women home with him to spend the night on a regular basis. Needless to say, we don't approve, but we can't make him stop this behavior. We're afraid that if we give him an ultimatum, he'll leave and we'll never see him again. We can't bear to lose our only child. What do you recommend we do to encourage him to take responsibility in his life? Sincerely, Mrs. F.
Dear Mrs. F, Ms. Grace, the advice lady, has gone bye-bye. I am responding in her permanent absence. Your son is currently living the life of Riley. Why should he change? You and your husband have failed as parents. That's all there is to it. Failed. How did your daughter die? Was it from a catastrophic accident that I caused? The idea makes me smile. She died. Go stab a grocery store clerk. You'll feel better about being a useless parent. Joker.
Dear Ms. Grace, last month my wife's older brother invited us to his house, hosting his own birthday party. I'll call him D. Although our money is tight, we bought D a new food processor, which he mentioned he needed. Just yesterday we were at my wife's younger brother's house, I'll call him L, and to my astonishment we learned that D had re-gifted the food processor to L. We were told that the gift was a result of D clearing out his house recently and unloading items he didn't need. Both my wife and I were affronted by this. I want to give D a piece of my mind, but my wife doesn't want to stir the pot. What would you advise? Sincerely, annoyed.
So you are annoyed. You are annoyed. Why are you annoyed? What do noids do for fun? Are noids allowed to get a driver's license? Maybe your gift was a hunk of useless crap. Was it a brand name gadget? Maybe he got rid of it because it sucks. And on that topic, you suck, annoyed. You suck. Do you even got a pair in your Fruit of the Looms there, sporto? If you do, I hope, dope, mope, so po on a rope, your genitals have a close encounter with said food processor. Maybe if someone fed you some penis pate, you would learn to act like a man with balls instead of writing letters like a girl. If I see you on the street, I'm stabbing you in the ear. Joker. P.S. Purple grapes are my favorite of the Fruit of the Loom guys. P.P.S. Ms. Grace is dead, so stop writing to her. Don't write to me either, because you are a douche.
Dear Ms. Grace, my older sister is a senior at the high school where I'm a sophomore. Her friends came over for a slumber party last weekend, and one of them brought alcohol. I saw my sister drink some, even though she's only 17. I think I should tell my parents, but I'm afraid she'll start mean rumors about me in school if I tell. What should I do? I don't want her to get hurt by drinking and driving. Sincerely, worried little sister.
Why wasn't I invited to the party? Slumber parties are my favorite. When everyone is giggling and painting each other's toenails, it's easy to rob the house and set it on fire. Don't tell your parents about the alcohol. No one likes a snitch, little sister, did you hear me? No one likes a snitch. Snitches don't live long in Gotham. Start mean rumors about your sister at school, like maybe she slept with the whole football team and has chlamydia. VD is funny. Then she'll lose all her friends and no one will bring her alcohol, and she'll sit at home and mope and realize she's a loser and get knocked up by the first guy who sleeps with her. Then she'll marry him and take out all her anger on him and push him into a life of alcoholism and petty crime. I need another recruit. I keep killing mine off. Do it and watch her life unravel. Low self-esteem is funny. Ha ha! Joker. By the way, Ms. Grace is D-E-A-D, so I am the only one who will answer advice letters now.
Dear Ms. Grace, I am asexual and have no interest in a romantic relationship with anyone, regardless of gender. Despite the fact that I've made my orientation known to my friends, I find that a few of them still flirt and try to ask me out on dates. How do I make my disinterest clear without destroying a friendship? Sincerely, not interested.
Well, well, well. So you don't like advances, hmm? What if they came from someone like me? If I start to make advances and put the moves on you, would that also make you uncomfortable? If I say, hey, baby, call me Joker instead of Ms. Grace, because I'm the party and I'm where it's at, would you get all flustered? Would you blush and try to hit me? Would you hit me hard? I'd like that. So just give me your address, and I'll find you, and I'll hit on you and make you upset, and you can hit me, and I can enjoy it, and it'll be a great arrangement. In the meantime, there's always time to be mean. Before I get there, just get your point across to people that you don't want to get hit on. Carry a switchblade and whip it out when they don't expect it. Like in the middle of watching a romantic comedy with Katherine Hagel. Threaten to cut a man's balls off. We generally don't like that. Threaten to carve a woman's face up. They definitely don't like that. Joker. P.S. Ha!
Dear Joker, I have a question. Can I please, please, please be your slave? I'll do anything you want. I'll shoot the president. I'll blow up a nursing home and a daycare center. I can cook, too. I worship you and would do anything and everything you ask with a big smile on my face. Jen.
Ah, my dear Ms. Jen. You are the first reader to address me directly, so for that I will lick your face. Then I might bite your ear if I feel like it. I do stuff like that. Because I can. So, since this is an advice column like a sim, here is what I would advise. Be careful about offering to be a slave to anyone in Gotham. There are some very unsavory people in this rat hole of a city. Rat, rat like a flying bat. However, I do happen to have a vacancy, and I am the exception to the rule because I rule, so you can be my slave. Cut the crusts off my sandwiches. I hate onions, so don't make any meals with them. I like lots of red meat. If you burn my pancakes, you'll piss me off and I'll find a new slave girl. And you'd better smile pretty for me. Me, 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 me. Joker.
Hi, Artichoke. Oh my goodness. One of the things I want to get clear is that I actually love the Joker. He is one of my favorite, villains of comic universe. Just really love his style and everything. I like the Joker voice that you pulled on this, the insanity and the twist and everything. Like, oh, that was awesome. Definitely good story choice for you. I felt a lot of energy. I felt that you were having a lot of fun with this, and I overall enjoyed this a lot. What did you think, Zane?
I really liked it, even though it's kind of sounded like you're trying to pull off the Mark Hamill style. I was like, for the Joker, I was a little bit confused by that because it was like, it seemed like you were trying to pull off a twist between Mark Hamill and Heath Ledger Joker, which is a really interesting twist. From what it sounded like, but other than that, I mean, this was really good. This is really well done. I love the voices. Like, every single letter that was written, thank you, actually had a different voice. And that was awesome. And it was just wasn't like every single derogatory thing. And this was just really good. And, you know, I got nothing else left to say, but this was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
you got anything else left?
Nope, other than that.
Alright, so coming up next is the one and only Malt.
Dun, dun, dun.
5 months. 5 months since he had completely corrupted his shrink's fragile mind. 5 months since she had broken him out of Arkham. 5 months of running about the city of Gotham, looting, creating violence, and giving old Batsy something to do.
5 months too many for the Joker. Harley was driving him absolutely crazy, with her constant fawning over him and her hyperactive personality and her pathetic, lovesick stare. Sure, she'd proven herself to be useful in cases of helping fight Batman, or keeping the henchmen in line, or even sometimes downright making him smile with her charm and sweetness, but she was so damned annoying. All she ever did was coo and cling all over him and get him foaming at the mouth with her non-stop chatter about marriage and babies and making ha-ha in the bed every night.
Puddin', what you doing? Are you going out? Can I come too, please? We never go out anymore. Let's go bother the commissioner or something. I'm bored. Hey, Puddin'! Puddin'!
God, he couldn't take it anymore. He was a man, damn it. He was sick of this lovey-dovey, kissy-goo clown poop. He was tired of her sheepish, ridiculous expressions for adoration. He needed to end it all now, before his devious, beautiful brain exploded from irritation. So, the clown decided that it was most decidedly time to end the young Harlequin's life. Smiling wickedly in the gloom of the hideout as Harley slept soundly on their creaky mattress, he began to plot.
Oh, pumpkin pie!
Joker's voice was dripping with sweetness enough to make even the most devoted of sugar cravers wince back with uneasiness. Harley looked over at her beloved man, a smile spreading widely across her face at the sight of his pleasant mood.
Hiya, Mr. J!
Oh, Harley... he cooed in a sing-song voice. Harley, girl, sweet and his beloved, do you know what day it is? He was trying hard not to laugh at the feigned tenderness of his own voice.
What day is it, Mr. J? I don't remember looking on the calendar and seeing any holidays.
Sweet, fluffy, chicken-feathered mother of mercy, she was so oblivious.
Oh, but surely you remember, my pet. It's a very special day, an anniversary of sorts.
Her eyes widened with realization, and she began hopping up and down with giddy excitement.
I know! A 5-month anniversary! I've been with you for 5 wonderful, glorious months, Puddin'.
Wonderful and glorious, my bony foot, he thought to himself darkly, but decided to keep the act going.
That's right, you're so clever, my dear. And to celebrate, I got us something very nice.
She blinked as he showed her a new, unopened bottle of fine wine. A purple and green bow wrapped neatly around it. Her brow seemed to furrow slightly.
But Puddin, I don't really like to drink. I mean, my mom did a lot of it after Papa died, and...
Nonsense! It's a very special occasion. Come, sit down over here and try some, finest in all of Gotham, if you ask me. And maybe when you're done, I'll give you a special surprise.
Harley, not wanting to displease him, complied and held out a glass, watching cautiously as he poured her the glimmering, alcoholic beverage.
She sniffed at it like a curious puppy, but finally took a sip, smiling lovingly at him as she drank some as well. How is it, Harl?
I like it, Mr. J. It's, yummy, I guess. I haven't really had a drink in a while.
Poor Har-Har. No fun such a long time, huh?
Yeah, till you, Puddin.
His smile faded a bit when she said that. For a moment, he almost felt guilty.
Oh, really?
He thought.
Don't get too distracted, Joker, old boy. Remember, she's been driving you bonkers for so long.
Harley's glass was now empty, and the clown grinned and refilled it with wine, watching with amusement as Harley's lip trembled slightly at the prospect of having to drink more. At last, she weakened and drank the second glass down, prompting him to refill the glass again. Soon, she was beginning to sway slightly, a taupey smile on her face.
So, what's this surprise you were talking about, Mr. J?
Oh, just a little something I've been planning since yesterday. A sort of special surprise, really.
Yay! I want to go see it now.
Not yet, my sweet. Let's finish off this wine first. He needed her to be drunk as possible. He had decided to kill her quickly and painlessly, a present for her loyalty and services as his henchwench. Killing her quickly while she was floating away with intoxication was probably the kindest thing he could do. Two more glasses of wine. Harley was giggling up a storm now, her eyes swerving as if someone had left her on a sit-and-spin for several hours. She was totally drunk out of her mind now, he decided. She was ready. He would do it now. Getting up, he took her hand and led her to one of the empty rooms of their hideout, holding her up in case she'd fall. She leaned on him happily, purring with delight. Harl, remember this little surprise I keep talking about? You're going to get it now.
Really?
She slurred.
Goody, I can't wait.
He chuckled. I bet you can't. Digging in one of the pockets of his purple coat, he got out a blindfold and held it out to her. If you want the surprise, you have to put this on. You can't peek. She giggled and clumsily put the blindfold over her eyes, waltzing awkwardly over to a corner of the room. A perfect shot. He got the gun out and began to load it, his bony fingers trembling with excitement. This was it. No more annoying hench wenches. No more cheesy romantic talk. No more interrupting his hilarity with her stupid puns. This was it. One quick bullet to the head, and Harley would never have to leech all over him ever again. This would be her final bow in this great, sick romance play of theirs. As he fumbled with the bullets, Harley danced around in a drunken circle, humming happily to herself.
Hey, Puddin, am I gonna like the surprise?
Oh, yes, he muttered distractedly. It's a real killer, Harley. Damn it, why couldn't he load this fucking gun? His hands were shaking.
Puddin, is it gonna be the best surprise I've ever had?
Yes, yes, now pipe down a bit. Daddy needs to get this done first so that he can get it. Click. Yes, the gun was loaded. He could do it now. His mouth was stretched back to a wide, malevolent smile, his heart pulsing rapidly at the thought of killing. He aimed the gun for her head.
Puddin?
What, Harley? He frowned at her interruption.
I love you so much. I can't wait for our next tangle with that breath. We'll have some laughs, won't we, Mr. J? Puddin, won't we?
His hands, his scrawny fucking hands, were trembling. He tried to pull the trigger, but found that his hands wouldn't let him. He just couldn't kill her. Couldn't bring himself to destroy the very thing he had molded. She was annoying, and she was too energetic, and she gave him a migraine, but he just wasn't able to end her life now. Hey, boss! A henchman said, striding into the room suddenly. The boys and I were thinking about going out tonight and blowing some of our dough. Can we? Bang. The poor fellow collapsed to the ground, blood flowing out of the bullet hole in his head. Don't ever interrupt me. Joker hissed to the stiffening corpse.
Mr. J?
Harley squeaked out, still swaying slightly from the wine.
What was the bang for? Was that the surprise? What's going on?
He turned his focus back towards her and sighed.
Puddin, did you forget about me?
He dropped the gun suddenly and brought his lips to hers. The kiss was nice somehow, reminding him of what a pleasure it had been seducing her during their sessions. Their lips lingered on each other for a moment, and the Joker decided that, a handful as she was, Harley was just too special to kill. Too pure. For the first time, he felt something foreign and warm. Was it love? No, he couldn't admit to that. Right? He pulled away at last, and Harley, his little harlequin alive, now and forever, removed her blindfold, staring up at him with shining eyes.
That was the best surprise I've ever gotten,
she whispered in hushed tones. He grinned.
Alright, so Malt. Alright, so this was interesting. I absolutely have to say I liked your Harley voice. This sounded really, really, really good. Except I have to agree with some people, some things on this though, is that yeah, this was the actual main thing itself when you're actually telling the story, when you're not in character or anything like that, got boring. And it was just like, it was kind of, yeah, it was 10 minutes and it felt like 10 minutes. It just felt long and drawn out. Other than that, I mean, the voices really helped it along too as well. So I have to say, if between this, it just felt really drawn out, but the voices were really good. Libby?
Yeah. This was really rough. It was really long. I didn't really follow most of it. But, I mean, it was good. I liked the story, and the characterization you put into Harley. It was definitely her voice I could hear. Joker, I liked the interaction between the characters, but again, it was just drawn out.
Yeah.
I felt like maybe if you could have put more tension, maybe it would have been better. But this really did kind of push the limit, time-wise, and just, I feel really bad.
Yeah, like, for an example, too, when you went bang, you were just kind of like, bang, nonchalantly, bang. You could have just, like, literally went in there and went, bang! And just like, whoa, what the heck? And then that would have, like, really gotten our attention, too.
Yeah, that probably would have. It's just some stuff, you know, to think about later on. If you ever, have questions on, like, maybe how, like, more specific questions from what we're trying to say right now, you can just ask.
Yeah. And we'd be more than happy to tell you.
Yep.
All right. So I have nothing else left, you?
No.
All right. Let's move on to Skywish.
All righty.
Disclaimer. I owe nothing. Nothing. Author's note. As promised, faithful reviewers, a piece of fluff that takes place between Nestling and Dark Horizon, I hereby proudly present part one of Blithering Bats. It's Halloween, Batman! Back from taking Miss Angelique Kegelar, the hottest new singing sensation to the hit Gotham clubs, out to lunch, Bruce nearly tripped over a stuffed black cat that had mysteriously appeared in the side hall. Kicking Puss to a corner, he moved on, staring at strings of glow-in-the-dark plastic skulls that dangle from the ceiling and a jack-o'-lanterns that rested on nearly every available surface. Pushing through a curtain of black crepe paper into the kitchen, he found Alfred dipping apples into this gooey caramel mixture and carefully wrapping them in waxed paper.
"Good afternoon, sir. Did you have a nice time with Miss Kegelar?"
Bruce snorted.
"Are you kidding? The woman is a total..."
He paused and selected a descriptor appropriate to the seasons.
"Witch.
We had a fight in the parking lot and she slapped me." He touched his cheek gingerly.
"Of course she had no provocation."
I might have kind of told her she looked like Boris Karloff.
"I see.
So it must be Halloween or something," Bruce said, changing the subject.
"It is. In fact, the 31st of October."
Alfred batted away Bruce's hand that was reaching for this caramel bowl.
"No gems. These are for the children's party."
"Dick's going to a party?"
"Yes. The neighborhood is having a supervised trick-or-treat, followed by a party at the community center."
"It's funny, but I always kind of forget we have neighbors."
In fact, other houses weren't even visible from Wayne Manor, sequestered as it was in the extensive grounds.
"It'll be good for him to be with some other kids for a change."
"So I thought, sir."
"So where am I going?"
Bruce asked, certain there was something he'd be required to appear at, although he hadn't the foggiest idea what.
"Why, you're going with Dick, sir, as one of the parents' chaperones."
One dark eyebrow quirked upward.
"Am I?"
"Yes, Master Dick. He will be pleased. He was a bit nervous about going with a party of strangers."
Bruce mentally compared a children's costume party to one of Gotham Society's usual affairs and decided there wasn't much to choose between the two.
"Why not? When does this thing start?"
"At 6 o'clock. Your costume was delivered this afternoon. I put it on your bed."
"My costume?
Bruce echoed. All of the other chaperones are going to be dressed up, and I didn't think that you would wish to stand out. Oh, of course not, Bruce sighed, reluctantly relinquishing the idea of slouching around in jeans and a hoodie. So, Alfred, what am I going to be? Ah, Master Dick picked out the costumes, sir. You and he are a matched set. Well, if Dick likes it, it can't be too bad. Darth Vader, maybe? Perhaps you'd like to see for yourself, sir. Bruce shrugged. All right. Snatching a caramel apple off the tray, he ambled out of the kitchen. Alfred kept an eye on the clock. 3 minutes to get up the stairs and into his room. 30 seconds till he opens the box. Alfred! The anguished howl echoed through the august halls of the manor. Depositing a wrapped apple in the place of the one Bruce had stolen, Alfred went upstairs. Yes, Master Wayne. Bruce was staring in mingled horror and disbelief at an object that dangled full length from his fingertips. Alfred, what is this? The butler made a show of explaining the item. Why, it appears to be a Batman suit, sir. It was indeed, complete with a long black cape, a flashy gold belt, and a padded chest sculpted out of foam, with a bright gold bat logo in the center. It's spandex! One size fits all, Alfred said brightly. If you think for one nanosecond that I'm going to... Dick bounded into the room, dressed from head to toe in his own Batman suit, plastic cowl clutched in one hand. Look, Bruce, our costumes match. Bruce had to admit that his ward looked adorable, but he couldn't quite think of a comment to make about his own situation. Dick's face suddenly grew anxious. Alfred said it would be all right. You know, that people wouldn't think someone who dresses up as Batman would really be Batman. Oh yeah, he's right, Bruce managed. I mean, this obviously doesn't look like anything the real Batman wears. Dick looked at his own costume in satisfaction. It's still pretty good, though. Over the boy's bent head, Bruce shot Alfred a poisonous glare and made a violent slashing motion across his throat. Did you see the bloody hand we put on the front door? Dick asked eagerly. Not yet, Bruce admitted. Come on! Dick darted out the door. It's so gross! You're fired, Pennyworth, Bruce hissed as he stalked past his butler. Fired! Alfred just smirked. To be continued. Author's note. This was supposed to be a one-shot, but I have to go to bed. I have student-teacher conferences tomorrow, and for the first time in my life, I'm the teacher. Ack!
Alright, so Skywish. This was really good. I absolutely loved all the voices you did. The whole story was just really good. I laughed hysterically when, like, I knew it was going to happen. He was going to find the Batman costume there. But instead of a cheap one, I thought it was actually going to be the Batman costume that he normally wears. But apparently it's the cheap one. But still, that's still funny, though. It's crap. This whole story was just really good. I absolutely loved it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I can't really pick out anything right now. So, yeah. So this was just really good. I absolutely loved it. Livy?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was cute. Zane pretty much did everything I was going to say.
Well, you could have gone first, but no, you didn't want to go first.
Well, no, I didn't want to go first. I didn't expect you to steal everything.
I'm sorry?
You should be. Overall, I think it was a really cute story. It made me laugh and smile. Nothing else, much else to say, because Zane is a word stealer.
Yeah.
See what I put up with?
Yeah, okay, see what I have to put up with. Jeez. Her attitude changes five every 5 seconds. It's crazy.
Okay. What's up next?
Alright, so up next before I die is Temporary Butterfly.
The house that Jack built. Jack impatiently tapped his fingers across the steering wheel as he listened to his partner, Frankie, nervously ramble from the passenger seat. The two were parked at the docks, waiting to meet with someone who had become a burden to their boss. This is a constant encumbrance in his life, always lying in wait like a snake to devour the helpless, but always in the same way. The murky waters that lapped against the docks held much more than ships. Although he had become quite used to this aspect of his job, couldn't help but feel dread in the pit of his stomach. Normally, Jack knew nothing about the person he would have to kill. As soon as he was given a job, he would immediately begin to fantasize about the horrible life that person undoubtedly led. He would imagine that they were ruthless abusers who loved no one, had no family, no one to mourn them. But this night was different. Jack knew exactly who his hit would be. He was well aware that the usual hideous traits he imagined were anything but true. Anthony Mio, went by Tony, was new to Gotham. He, like Jack, had found himself entwined into the underbelly of Gotham's more questionable society. He, Jack, and Frankie had become improbable but fast friends. Unlike his two companions, though, Tony liked to talk about his line of work, using it as a pickup line or mode of intimidation. This one overlooked for quite a while, but eventually his foolish self-bolstering became a liability, and he had to be quieted. Jack remained stoic on the outside, but felt an incredible amount of remorse for what he had to do. Jack knew that he and Tony were one and the same, and only a pair of loose lips separated them. Sal Ballester's verdicts were always the most severe. If you crossed him, you died. Jack knew that at any time, he could be the one about to walk into a grim fate. "I would much rather be parked here with a woman than you," Frankie half-heartedly joked, to lighten the mood. "Same here," Jack replied with a grin. "What do you think Sal does when he sends us out to do this shit?" Frankie thought for a moment. "Well, I think his evening starts by fucking his girlfriend at his office. Then he goes home and fucks his wife. Then he sits around smoking a cigar thinking of another way to fuck us." "That's a lot of fucking," Jack sighed as he slid down in his seat. "Yeah, especially for you, since you're the bitch that totes him from around from place to place," Frankie bantered. Jack rubbed his tired eyes. "I enjoy that part of my job. It gives me time to think. Plus, I don't have to listen to you." Frankie's expression fell into mock anguish. "Why do you gotta say things like that? I'm hurt." Jack laughed as he turned his sights back to the dockhouses. He hoped that Tony would be a no-show. Even though he and Frankie would have to hunt Tony down, it would at least postpone the inevitable. "This could be either one of us next time, you know?" Frankie's voice was deathly somber, as if this revelation had just occurred to him. "No," Jack barked. "It won't be us. You're smarter than that." The truth was, Jack knew Frankie was all too right. It was far easier to be defiant, though. "It won't happen to me." "Yeah, you're smarter than to run our mouths all over town, but who knows what could set Sal off next time?" Frankie's voice became almost frantic. "He could have told you to kill me, too." His eyes widened. "You could be planning to kill me right now. If I were going to kill you, I would have already done it." Jack turned slightly toward his fearful partner. "It won't be us." Frankie's mind seemed to calm for a moment, only to be re-energized by his morose imagination. "Maybe Salvador told Tony to kill us." A loud knock against the driver window startled both the men from their worried thoughts. Jack's heart sank as he turned to find Tony standing outside. Jack and Frankie traded uneasy glances to work up their courage before stepping out of the car. "You guys are here early, trying to impress the boss," Tony jested. Jack awkwardly answered. "You know how Frankie is, always trying to climb the corporate ladder." Tony hesitated for a moment as he noticed the tension between his two usually gregarious partners. "So, what's the job tonight?"
Usual,
Frankie's voice shook clumsily. Jack loudly cleared his throat to bring the attention back to himself.
"There's a lot to it. There's an open dock house over there. Let's go in and I'll explain it all to you."
Tony began to realize that something was amiss. This was the same speech that was given to each of their victims. He briefly thought to run, but there was no use. He had no choice but to follow their instructions. If he ran from them, they would certainly follow. Anywhere they went, he would be found. There was no escape. The three men dragged their feet as they walked to the nearby dock house. Each thought over the possibilities of what could happen. Tony could fight back and take out one of the others with him. He could go down easy or try to escape. Anything was a possibility. As they crossed the threshold to the inside, Tony quickly turned to his colleagues.
If you're going to do this, at least do it quick. Jack scowled as a large metal door slammed shut behind him. Just wait. No, Tony interrupted. Don't give me the same bullshit that we give everyone else. If you're gonna do it, do it. Jack stepped closer to Tony. You don't even know what we're going to do. You don't have to do anything. Tony's voice quivered as he begged for mercy. You could just let me go. No one would ever know. You know we can't. Jack began to answer, but was quickly stopped. Just hear me out, Tony pleaded. I will leave the state, leave the country. I will never speak of you or any of this ever again. He backed away, stumbling against an old wooden table. We always get rid of the bodies. No one would be the wiser. Jack looked at the over his shoulder to Frankie, who was nervously shifting back and forth near the door. He fretfully fumbled with his pistol holster as he thought about Tony's words. Would anyone know? Tony was right. They just always disposed of the bodies. No one ever surfaced again. Come on, Jack. We're friends. Tony became more and more desperate with Jack's silence. His worried eyes turned to Frankie. Frankie, please, think about it. Before Frankie could even speak, the loud echo of Jack's pistol firing resonated throughout the metal dockhouse, followed by the dull thump of Tony's lifeless body hitting the concrete floor. Jack stood over Tony for several moments, watching the blood slowly pool around the toes of his shoes before backing away. As he moved, he couldn't take his eyes off Tony. He had seen countless bodies, dead bodies of friends, but never a body of a friend whose life he had personally taken. He didn't know how to feel, admiration or disgust with himself for being capable of killing someone he had called a friend. Familiar cold sweat began to form on his brow. He had to get out of here. The metallic smell of Tony's blood was overpowering. It was forcing Jack to remember too many horrific things. He felt his chest tighten as he struggled for air. Ripping his gaze away, he stumbled over a pile of rope as he turned to leave. I did the hard part. You clean it up, he spat out as he passed Frankie.
All right, so temporary butterfly. This was not bad. Actually, I was a little disappointed because you were saying, talking up so much stuff about saying, oh, I can do Harley Quinn's voice. I'm really good at doing Harley Quinn. And yet, you don't do a story with Harley Quinn in it, which I was kind of expecting from you. But from what we got, this really wasn't that bad. I thought it was actually pretty good. But there were a few parts in there where you just were like, you stumbled over a few words, and you just kept going. You didn't just, like, either A, you didn't catch those stumblings, or B, you just did it all in one night, which is all in one take. That's what I mean to say. All in one take, including the stumblings in there, which is not exactly that good either. But I absolutely liked your voices, the voices that you gave to them, too, as well, so... Other than the fact of the stumbling, I would say you did pretty good. Olivia?
Yeah, I agree. You had better energy this week. But I kind of disagree with what Zane said. I don't know. I mean, like, this was better energy than what you've had in previous weeks, so I think that you are on a way back up, so don't worry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely agree.
Yes.
Alright, so I got nothing else left, you?
Nope.
Alright, so up next we have the one and only Stratofarius.
Knock, knock. Written by Night Monkey.
Right, and that was from the latest film by Monty Python. Stay tuned to Gotham FM. And now, the news. The report.
All right, John, turn it off. Are you recording?
Yep, turn off.
All right. This is a little Jehovah Witness story log. Today, we are on the narrows of the grave Gotham City. I'm Paul, and with me we have John.
Hiya there, I'm John.
And we've been on a really good streak today, so we decided to record the last person we visited today. So we are driving here in the Narrows looking for a door to knock on a person to share the Bible with.
The Narrows is full of people who, thanks to their bad lives, will be ready to accept the Bible. Isn't that right, Paul?
Right. Oh, look at that. There's our building. John, get the flyers.
All right. Here he goes.
Harley, there's somebody at the door.
But Mr. J, what if the police?
Chase them off. Well, what do you have that mallet for?
Cockroaches, Mr. J. They're bigger than cats, and they're all over everything.
Oh, this one's gonna be a bit hard. John, if you don't mind.
I don't mean to intrude, but we'd like to just pass the love of Jesus to you.
You just want a what? Oh, jeez, Mr. J, it's the Bible Thumpers.
Oh? Well, invite them inside.
You heard the boss, boys.
Well, oh, yes, lady. Mr. Clown Lady, who's dressed like a clown. Thank you.
Right this way. Mr. J should be down pretty soon. He's working on something real special. It's gonna make the papers.
Mr. J. Mr. Joker. Oh, shit.
Well, ain't that a word you're not supposed to say?
Paul, we're at the headquarters of the Joker. The Joker! Look at all these guns and chemicals and guns and chemicals. Look at that one. It's big enough it could kill a dinosaur.
Have a seat. I put on the telly, but Mr. J shot it when they cut out all the good parts in Pulp Fiction. Can't really blame him.
Thank you. Mind if we ask you about that big bowl of glowing stuff?
Don't worry about that stuff, boys. It's just paint.
Why do you need a paint that glows?
Why not?
Whoa, what is that?
Oh, here he comes.
Hal, if I was you, I'd stayed out here. The new project just burned the curtains. And the desk. And your half of the bed. And my new suit.
My new purple suit. Oh, Mr. J, are you okay? Do you need to call the fire department?
Nope, everything's just dandy now. On the off chance anyone sees a bright flash, look at your nearest exit and don't look back.
Oh, sweet Jesus, I think I'm coming home.
These are the guys, Mr. J. What should we do with them? You want to send them out smiling?
These two? Waste of laughing gas, Harl. The Joker fish were a great idea. The Joker Jehovah's Witness? Nah, let me set off some efforts. What do we have here? Any good reading material? Anything I should pass on to the bat next time we see him? Look at this one, Harley. Finding the real meaning of Easter. Who needs help with that? Everyone knows Easter is about candy, just like Christmas is about presents.
Actually, the meaning of Easter is Jesus' death and resurrection. Please don't kill me, please don't kill me, please don't kill me, please don't kill me, please don't.
Candy, torture, and crucifixion. Candy, torture, and crucifixion. What sounds better?
Candy, of course. Especially jelly beans. Mr. J likes chocolate bunnies. He bites their little heads off.
Easter? Boring. Tax evasion? Boring. Boring, 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 boring. Pathetic! Harley, fetch the mud!
Here you go.
What's the hammer for?
I don't know.
For this!
Don't hit the pamphlets with that! You can't do that to the Word of God!
The hell I can't! Now, let's go outside, boys. I want to check your ride.
Are we gonna die now?
Aren't we already dead?
No, this car is no good. No good at all. Holly, fetch the mallet again. Thank you. Look what I did to the car of God!
He completely obliterated the car!
I did the same to you, but I'm just too tired right now. Harley, is this thing getting bigger?
No! That car cost me $1,000!
Maybe your car can get resurrected, boys. If it does, just send us the newsletter, okay? See ya!
Hey, Paul.
But
just wondering one thing. You think Batman has found salvation?
Hey, Strata Ferris. Okay. So here's my biggest issue with this, and it's something that I was kind of afraid of happening. We always warn people to have caution when you're using special effects, because it can either really work out for you and really be like a great accent to the story, or it can really be the drawback and the thing that really damages your story. And for the last two times that you've used special effects, I mean, they've really worked out well. But I think that this time around, you relied really heavily on it, and it really seemed more of a radio play and a voice acting kind of drama-ish rather than a fan fiction, if that makes sense. I think that it's fallen a bit from a storytelling to a acting. That's my really biggest issue with this. I mean, don't get me wrong, this was great. I mean, I really did enjoy it. I like the dialogue, but this isn't what we are looking for.
Yeah. I have to agree with her on this one. This one, it just seems like you're just a one-trick pony. Show us some more depth. Show us this next time around. Don't use any. If you get through the next round, don't use any sound effects. Show us that you have got something there that brings the story to life without having the sound effects there. Because this is actually one of the things I was afraid of as well, was that you were going to be the one-trick pony, and that the only thing you can do is just do sound effects, trying to make it look nice and pretty. But, like, especially with some of these ways that, like, trying to turn a story into a radio play style, it kind of doesn't work, almost because there were certain parts where I was lost to what people were doing, because all I could hear was sounds. And it would be nicer, like, if you had, I don't know, it would be cool if you did have the narration still, and yet you still had that pounding in there and everything else going on, and just was like, yeah, you have that there for...
That's what you were doing earlier in the competition. Mm-hmm. I think that what you're... I mean, I'd like to see that, too. I guess you could take it as our challenge to you.
Yeah, just don't use sound effects.
Well, not only just not using sound effects, but I really want to see you get into the story.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, for me, I started storytelling by telling it to a bunch of rowdy Girl Scouts at a camp, you know, and I didn't have, you know, all I had was sound effects I could make myself, such as knocking against a table, or voice acting effects, such as, you know, making a crazy witch's laugh. And I tried really hard not to have a book in front of me, or if I did have text in front of me, I'd try and, you know, concentrate on them. And really, the best way to keep an audience's attention is to really get into the story yourself and really do most of that stuff yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
I know you can do it. That's the thing, is I know you can do it. Mm-hmm. So this is our challenge to you. Next round, I don't want to see you use any special effects or, you know, music. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed this piece. It was really good. It's not what we're looking for.
Yeah, we're just not looking for the next best radio play style thing going on here. And yet, though, you know what? That's all I got left to say, is that this might have actually damaged it a little bit. But to be honest with you, I know you had fun with this. I could tell you had fun with this, completely had fun with this. And thinking about Jehovah's Witnesses going and taking on Batman, going into Batman's territory would be freaky. That would be funny.
Yeah, I really did enjoy it. It's just, I think that you're starting to become a little bit too reliant on it. So,
yeah,
let's see. Come on, you can do this. So,
yep.
Who's up next?
All right, up next we have the one and only Dylan Collins.
All right.
Abduction by Crimson Berry 255. The night was not a good time to let one's guard down, but usually in the Wayne house it was perfectly fine. None had gotten into the fortress uninvited. If they were, they were painfully extracted from the premises. He tried not to laugh to himself, knowing that Bat was dealing with troublesome villains with the League elsewhere. Besides, Alfred, the crafty bastard, there was nobody to protect little Nightwing as he slept tonight. The young man was sometimes strolling in drunk after some late-night party. He didn't seem to know that anything was amiss, that he was being watched. He was out cold tonight, catching up on some sleep from the night before, when he had waved goodbye to the couple men and headed home when they were out of sight. He was interacting with the normal ones, who had no idea who he was. They were clueless, and only there for the good party that Dick seemed to be showing them. Creeping along the carpet, he peered over the sleeping form, not a care in the world but his own dreams. The warmer night had him in a tank top and boxers with the normal symbol on them. Reaching down carefully, he pressed a towel to the soft mouth, letting him inhale deeply and sleep. Eyes shot open and body shook, reaching out strongly to rip the damn rag from his face, but after getting the jump on him, he had a better stance, keeping his arms locked as he was thrown around. Eyes tried to identify him, but under the mask, things could become secret. His mask was pitch black, like the very night around them. The angry and horrified face finally calmed down as he could not fight the chemicals any longer. The figure drew back the sheets and threw them over his shoulder, walking out of the room like nothing had happened. He took the back way into the cave, almost feeling like whistling even as he bore the heavy young man down the stairs into the cool feel and stone smell of the Bat family's favorite place. Costumes peered back at him in glass containers as he walked by, but he turned the lights off as he went. Deeper and deeper he went, starting to find the weight annoying on his back. He opened a small rock that would take quite a while to find if he didn't know how to look for it, and checked outside before walking in. Dick awoke in a strange haze, head swimming with dark and creeping thoughts. It was a little bit colder. The comfort of his bed was not beneath him. His eyes narrowed and he tested his arms. They were held fast, cold metal tight around his wrists and upper arms. Legs also strapped down at the ankle and knee very solidly. He cursed himself for the situation going through the various scenarios in his head. Who in Gotham would want to do this? Not another little prank by Damian. Was Bruce really letting himself slip? Did he not update the security software properly? He tried to stay quiet, even as he wanted to shout out. The air around him was settled, yet not stuffy. It was dark, no sort of artificial or natural light even leaking in. He tried to figure out what time it could possibly be, remembering the effects of chloroform, how Batman had taught him little by little to be able to be more resistant to it. He was out of practice, or that was something stronger. He took a deep breath and let himself relax, trying to keep the oxygen flowing right to his brain. Footsteps! Footsteps coming closer and closer. Some sort of leather boot, the very faint jingle of buckles and straps. The body was maybe around 200 pounds, give or take. Height, it wasn't as hard to tell with the still air, maybe around 6 feet and a couple inches. The footfalls were sure of themselves. Too sure. He didn't like that. He turned his head to try to figure out the face of his assailant.
"Little Nightwing, Richard, Dick," the deep voice said, muffled by the black mask. He had never seen it before, and it left no real answers to who was under it.
"I would ask who you are, but I bet that would just be silly," Dick answered, face calm and angry.
"Silly? Perhaps. But could anyone really blame you? Snatched up from your bed while your fellow comrades who have known you for so long sleep and hear nothing. I would think you'd be more scared, seeing as nobody has gotten in the Wayne Manor before. Very tight security, pain to work around.
But let's get down to the real fun, shall we? Two men, light hair, medium build, green eyes, the other brown hair, a bit lighter build, brown eyes.
What kind of business do you conduct with them?" the figure asked, waving a picture of the three outside a bar.
Dick's face went blank.
"Financial. Investments for the Wayne Corporation. We're branching out in various fields. Wasn't important enough for Bruce to do himself. I offered to do it. A little bit less attention in the open," he replied. The figure chuckled under the mask. "You're not very good at lying, Dick. Did anyone ever tell you that the side of your mouth twitches just a little smidge when you lie?" the man asked.
Dick narrowed his eyes. "Why have you brought me here? Would you like money? Some place in the company? Please leave my family out of this. If there is some concern that can be addressed," he said, practiced at talking down the criminals that may nab him.
"A very cute little act there, but no, I'm not interested in that. I merely want to know what you do with your time with these so-called business investors. They don't look the type.
They look more like high-class whores," the figure said, pointing a finger accusingly at him. "Who are you, my mother? Did you seriously go through all this trouble to ask me if I sleep with men?"
"Yes, I do."
Does that somehow make you happy?"
"Go ahead, print it in the papers, I don't care. If you don't mind, I'd like to get back to sleep, which was so rudely interrupted."
A leather finger runs down Dick's face slowly, but he does not flinch.
"You're so boring sometimes, Dick.
Makes me think you should be Batman after all. You have the grumpy deadpan thing down, the man stated, shrugging. Dick scrunched his nose and narrowed his eyes. You're such a lunatic. What possessed you to do this? To ask if I was gay? Really, Jay? Let me out of this stupid thing and let me go back to bed, the former Robin said, annoyed. Jason pulled the mask off, hair a bit messy, a smug look on his face. Oh, don't be like that, Dick. Word is on the street that you love being tied up, he said, throwing his mask and gloves to the side. Dick sighed, wondering why Jason had to be such a creep sometimes. It's none of your business, really, what I do or don't do with my sexual life, Jay. He groaned in exasperation, glaring at the younger man. It's not very fair to say, he said, running a bare hand down Nightwing's lightly clothed chest. What are you getting at? The older brunette asked, tired of his silly games. Something interesting, I assure you, he said, pulling and flicking a small butterfly knife, and quickly drawing it over the cloth of the shirt, tearing it nicely without damaging any skin. He throws it out of the way, looking down a bit hungrily at the bare-chested Dick, his hands running down his skin, ushering a small shiver from Dick's body. I would have thought, with how close we are, Dicky, that you would have told me something so interesting sooner. Jason smirked, warm hands exploring Nightwing's neck and stomach. Dick clenched his teeth and glared up at him. I wouldn't have gotten a punch to the face and various slurs thrown at me, he said, shrugging. Maybe when everyone was looking, Jason said, leaning forward and taking a deep inhale of Dick's skin, then letting his face nuzzle into the crook of his neck and plant a hot, wet kiss there. The older brunette swallowed, trying to keep his body calm as he was teased. Jason had to be playing around with him. Soon he would pull back and leave him here for a while as some sort of strange punishment. The lips and tongues moved against the pale skin, taking in every taste of him. Hands, trying to keep from running down to the area he really wanted to explore. Jason bit down on Dick's neck, uttering a small cry from him, to which he tried to stifle and turn away. His body felt hot under the younger man's touch, somewhere, knowing he was being toyed with, but also wishing very hard it was all real. Knock it off, Jay, this isn't funny, he said, struggling a little bit underneath him. Jason pulled back from his kissing and licking to smirk up at Dick. It isn't meant to be funny. I know you want this. You probably think of me every damn night, wanting me to secretly tie you up and have my way with you. Such a coward, Dicky, Jason purred, squeezing a nipple between his teeth softly. Dick choked back a moan, trying not to get too relaxed and let his head fall back. He couldn't help but watch as Jason worked his way around his body, making him want to cry out in pleasure every step of the way. He shivered, wondering what would happen if he happened to give in and let everything go. He hoped that the drug wasn't making him hallucinate. Jason was right. He had thought about this many times, trying to sleep at night. Sometimes he would have to stop himself from visiting Jason's bed to try it out. Jason was harsh, so he would not have easily forgiven such a thing if it was unwanted. But now, his hands and tongue all over him, Dick was beginning to slip into that fantasy again. He could feel himself becoming painfully hard at the alternating delicate and hard touches of Jason. He knew just where to touch to send the heat surging into his groin. Jason smiled against his skin, deciding that he would finally go to where he wanted. His knife once again agilely sliced the boxers down, and as they were pulled back, the shaven cock of Nightwing was revealed. It was twitching, stiff, and pink, ready for him. Jason chuckled. See? Look at how hard you are. I was right, wasn't I? You want to fuck me bad, he asked, but it seemed more like a statement as he watched a throbbing member. Dick looked away, hiding his blushing face from him, still not quite sure if he was playing around. Suddenly, there was the sound of the door opening. Jason bolted around, ready to kill anyone who dared intrude. There stood a sleepy-looking Damien, still glaring even as he rubbed his eyes. You're so noisy, Jason. What the hell are you doing down here at this hour? He paused, looking down at the table where Dick lay completely exposed and hard, his face turning away in embarrassment. I was just teaching Dicky some new torture resistance, Damien. Go back to sleep, Jason smirked, waving him away.
You two are so gay. I'm totally telling Tim about this. He will go as red as Batwoman's hair.
He grinned, closing the door as he laughed. Dick let out a small breath. He was holding. Jason sighed a little before looking back down to his little plaything. You know, I thought that would be a total mood killer. But it seems like you're leaking. Are you even harder now? Oh, that's kinky. You never told me you liked being watched, Dick. He smirked, letting a finger brush over the tip of the older brunette's cock, wiping off some of the pre-cum. A small bit fell into Dick's stomach. The rest Jason brought up to his mouth and sucked. Nightwing's eyes went rather wide as he watched his tongue snake out. You thought I wasn't serious, Mmm, you taste just as fucking delicious as I thought you would, Jason uttered, letting a couple more fingers stroke softly down Dick's member. The older brunette couldn't help but whimper at the touch, struggling under him.
Jay, we can't do this. It wouldn't be proper,
Dick gasped out, not sure if he fully believed it or not. Doesn't that make it all the more hot, Dickie? He cooed, gripping the pulsing cock in his hand and squeezing generously. Dick tried to stifle, biting his lip, biting down hard, as he tried to keep his hips from bucking up against the touch. Someone is still hesitant? Even after all this attention? Jason smirked, pulling his face and hand back from his body. Dick clenched his teeth, trying not to groan in frustration. The younger brunette chuckled, unzipping his leather jacket to reveal a bare, strong chest. Nightwing's eyes shut halfway, feeling his breathing speed up and body heat up even further. Shrugging off the coat, he started to unbutton his trousers. Dick's eyes watched with anticipation. Jason grinned, sliding his fly down slowly to antagonize the younger man. He could see him almost breathless with lust. Even as he refused to say so, Dick's eyes widened, and he realized that Jason was wearing nothing under his pants, thick cock standing at attention, and he slipped the fabric down to his knees onto the floor.
Like what you see, don't you, Dickie? Jason asked, shaking his hips a bit, erection bouncing.
All right, so Dylan, this was interesting. This was kind of a very awkward one, an interesting one to choose. Just a very odd one to choose. But okay, so for the content on there is just like it's really awkward content. But I'm not gonna go on the content. I'm gonna go on the actual storytelling and how well you told the story. Now, you stumbled on a few words a little bit here and there in the beginning of it. Then you actually were pretty calm into it, and you went with it. The voices in there were really good. Just everything to keep our attention. It really wasn't that boring, except when you stumbled a few times here and there, we could hear it. And yeah, this was just okay for me. This wasn't one of the best ones I've heard you ever do. Livy?
I wouldn't say it's the best I've heard him do. I've heard him do better.
No, no, it's not the best.
Oh, okay. Obviously, my hearing can be checked. Yeah. Not really a great one. I know you were rushing this one. You kind of submitted a bit late. But I'm glad you didn't drop. I was really concerned for a bit that you had, but you didn't. So I'm happy you submitted. However, I don't think you did a great job this round. Mostly what Zane said. I liked some of the bits. Other parts, again, content awkwardness, but, I mean, you know, stumbling happens. It happens, no worries.
Yeah.
But, I just felt like, I think that if you had more time, I think that you would have been able to, knock this one out. But I think that, just due to time reasons, I think that this really suffered.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely do that. Okay. All right. So up next is the results. So stay tuned.
Yep.
All right. All right. It's that time again. It's the results.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right. So right now there are 7 of you people. So yes. So this means that the next level is the top 6. The top 6.
Oh my goodness.
Can you believe it?
No.
We have been doing... Wait. Get this, though. We have been doing this for a month now.
About?
Well, it's been 4 rounds. This is the 4th round.
Well, still. Anyway.
This is awesome.
Results of what you guys are waiting for anyway.
Oh, yeah. So would you like to announce the winner?
I don't know. Would you?
I don't know.
Fine. Congratulations to the Artichoke. You did a fantastic job. I loved your entry. It really stood out to me. So you have 24 hours to determine what your fan fiction will be, or else it will be My Little Ponies, or another one that I will decide up to my discretion.
Wait. I got a question here. How come you get to decide what the punishment is?
Who said it was punishment?
Well, technically, if you're saying My Little Pony, apparently it's punishment.
No, it's just a fun one.
Well, well, also, there can possibly be Full Metal Alchemist, too. I'm just throwing out that out there right now.
Huh?
Full Metal Alchemist. I'm throwing that out there.
No.
Yeah. Okay. No. All right, so in second place right now, we got a tie between Skywish and Beloved Star. So congratulations.
Beloved just rushes forward with all that. But anyway, yes, Skywish and Beloved Star. You guys got tied for second place.
Yes. Yeah, so congratulations. Also, it's called... getting off topic.
And following up them is a tie for third. Dylan Collins and Temporary Butterfly.
Actually, technically, it's for fourth.
Oh, still.
You know what I mean. All right. So that means to our bottom two of the night, which is Stratofarius and Malt.
Yeah, and this is a little bit rough.
Yeah.
Basically, we both put you guys down here for various different reasons. Stratofarius, it wasn't because you were bad. It was just that you were really missing. You're starting to miss the point of this competition, and we really just want to get you back on track.
Yeah.
So don't become reliant on those special effects, because they're not going to win it for you every single round.
Mm-hmm.
And Malt... just really kind of a lot of the same issues that we've had in the past. Just lack of energy and this push.
Yeah, so two completely different kind of things with lots of energy, just wrong execution, and then no energy and just lack of having somewhat of the right execution, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so... sadly enough, we have to drop one of you.
Yep.
Which, I don't want to do that. but, yeah, though, Stratofarius, we're going to give you an extra timeout. We're going to give you an extra, whatever you call it, a second chance. Yes, a second chance to really get into the storytelling and really show us what you're made of.
We're going to ask you to go back to what you are, you know...
Yeah.
Remember when you first started out in this competition? Let's go back to the roots, you know, kind of thing.
And also, Stratofarius, no sound effects whatsoever.
No sound effects.
This week,
I want you to go back to the basics. Use your talent, your vocal talent. Yes. I want to hear this.
Also, this week, there will be no use. You cannot use any sound effects whatsoever.
We already said that.
I know. I'm just reiterating to everybody.
Oh, this is for everyone.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, for everybody. There's no sound effects whatsoever. So, Malt, I'm sorry to say this, but you have been eliminated from Teller of the Tales Season 3. I'm sorry, but this was actually, like...
I mean, like, I think you made it pretty far for... I mean, I know this is the first time you've ever done this competition, and I'm really proud of how far you've gotten. I don't think that this is anything you should be ashamed of.
Oh, no. No, definitely not. No,
definitely not. I know you've improved a lot, and I cannot wait to see you come back in the case that we might do a season 4.
Possibly season 4. Wink, wink, hint, hint.
If I don't murder Zane before then.
Oh, come on now. Why would you want to murder me?
Because you're irritating me. Okay.
When have you ever not irritated at me?
Anyway. So again, the artichoke, you have 24 hours to determine the next theme for the competition. Just email it to me and I will disperse the emails out to everybody else. Again, congratulations to all of you who are making it up to the top 6, and enjoy the rest of your evening, morning, afternoon.
Evening, morning, afternoon, really?
You know what?
What, you just trying to make sure you hit all the bases?
Oliviana, and I'm out.
And I'm Zane, and see you guys later on the next Teller of the Tales. Oh, yeah.